The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Brandy Spragata for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Magazine. Our first article by Samantha Vincenti is titled, How Amy Corbett Landed Her Dream Job Playing with Legos All Day. Amy Corbett has a job most kids would dream of. As senior designer manager at Lego, she gets to play with toys all day. More accurately, Corbett, also a judge on Fox's Lego Masters, helps create vibrant worlds made from interlocking parts. When Corbett greets me over Zoom from the Lego headquarters in Billund, Denmark, I soon share my enthusiasm over one of the products she's best known for, the Lego Friends playsets, not to be confused with Lego's Friends Apartments, which comes complete with Monica's iconic turkey. I tell Corbett about the first time my niece invited me to play in her Legoland, a sprawling network of brightly colored homes, businesses, and attractions. Having never seen the Lego Friends sets before, the array of miniature props woke the long-dormant dollhouse fan in me. The elaborate plots that my niece spun around each character that populated her town of bricks were equally fascinating, fueling hours of playtime with what began as a box of loose parts. Corbett gets it. I wish Lego Friends had been around when I was a little kid, she says. In her early years as a product designer with the company, Corbett and her team came up with it all. Not just the buildings and the characters they're sold with, but every single tiny detail that makes them so special, like the wee plastic cones in the ice cream cart or the thumbnail-sized kayak helmet that comes with the forest house. To start, sometimes we look at Heart Lake City and think, what do we need? What's the new place you should go to, and what do you need there to have the best day ever? Heart Lake City, I learn, is the official name for Lego Town. Other times, it begins with a story idea. A key part of developing any Lego Friends set is figuring out its story triggers. This requires lots of team discussion and, yes, literally sitting down with a pile of Legos to plot possible scenarios. We think, okay, if I want to play out a story, where is this happening? What story triggers do I need to build in so I can spark imagination in these different ways? Slowly, a fully realized environment comes together. Corbett says she relishes the small stuff, like going, what flavor does the ice cream sundae need to be? I make sure there's enough flavors that you can play the story. Oh, I don't like vanilla ice cream. I want strawberry, she explains. You just giggle to yourself or show the person next to you, look at this tiny little build I've made. A native of Glasgow, Scotland, Corbett attended the University of Glasgow and the Glasgow School of Art for a joint degree in product design engineering. I always loved doing art and design when I was in school, but I also really enjoyed doing math, she says. When she found a course of study that wouldn't force her to choose one, I was like, brilliant, I'm going to do that. But it took a few years for Corbett to find her footing in the program, because the creative in me always wanted to come out. Once she stopped resisting that inner struggle and began pouring that energy into a student project instead, Corbett saw that she'd been trying to tamp down exactly what made her talents unique. Her project's great grade confirmed it. I was like, wow, this is something I'm good at. From then on, I'm sure my teachers would tell you that every time I got a project, no matter how boring or mechanical engineering based it was, I'd make it something fun, she continues. Between her student work and a lifelong love of color that's evident on her Instagram feed, I think everyone around me knew that my calling was in toys or playful design. A classmate told Corbett she should apply for a job at Lego. Instead, she pursued another path after graduation, bringing her final year project to market as a product. It was another lesson on what Corbett didn't want. I realized I don't like working alone, and I was quickly becoming a project manager, she says. So she sat down and made a list of the 5 dream jobs she'd walk away from her business for. Working for Lego was number 1 on the list, Corbett recounts. 2 weeks later, a job opened up, and the rest was destiny. She relocated from Scotland to Denmark for the gig, and 8 years later, she says, her adopted country feels like home. As senior design manager, Corbett doesn't log as much hands-on bricks time as she'd like to these days. But it's a fair trade for the incredible projects she's been a part of, from working on the concept team for the Lego Movie 2 to her current gig as a judge on Fox's competition show Lego Masters, now in its second season. It's been an absolute whirlwind, Corbett, who had no prior TV experience, says of the very fast learning curve required to make the series. She's been delighted by both the Lego Masters team and the talented builders who compete on the show. Watching season one, you also get to see what you look like, what funny little quirks you have, she says. But making season two felt a bit more relaxing. We just had fun the second time around because we kind of knew what we were doing, Corbett laughs. In season two of Lego Masters, you'll see another product that Corbett calls her baby, Lego Dots, an arts and crafts-based line that lets users design their own bracelets, picture frames, and more. It was really cool to see not just kids using it, but these adult fans who can make these massive creations. It's clear that Corbett gets a genuine thrill seeing her people enjoy products she's worked on, whether she's watching the testing or playing at Lego headquarters, or scanning social media to peek people's builds. While excellent product design skills are required to do Corbett's job, the secret to making toys that are loved by kids and adults alike is staying curious and energized creatively. I feel like I'm a sponge and I just absorb inspiration from all angles, Corbett says, citing fashion, interior design, and her adopted home of Denmark as a few of her influences. Through Lego Friends, Dots, and future projects, Corbett also aims to disrupt the old idea that building is for boys. I am a very strong believer that Lego is a toy for everyone, she says, pointing to Lego Masters as Exhibit A. Though that doesn't mean that all kids play in the same way. So I'm also very much for kids choosing what they want to play with, how they want to play, and making sure that we have lots of Lego experiences that cater to all types of kids, so that they can choose anything they want. Our next article by Samantha Vincenti is titled, 9 Work From Home Jobs If You're Looking for an Office Change. We're in a gig economy right now, due in large part to shifts in the labor market and the fact that technology has made it easier than ever to work from home. In 2017, at least 43% of Americans spent time working remotely, up from 39% in 2012, according to a Gallup survey. Not satisfied with your current job or looking to pick up some extra money on the side post-retirement? Refill your coffee and prepare to kiss commuting goodbye. Number 1, seasonal customer service agent. Average hourly rate $12 an hour. All hourly rates via FlexJobs and Indeed. Earning extra money before the holidays isn't just for brick and mortar retail anymore. Various positions require a range of duties, including processing returns, scheduling deliveries, and helping shoppers place orders. If you've got customer service experience and own a webcam-enabled desktop computer or laptop with high-speed internet access, plus a compatible headset, this might possibly be a good job for you. Number 2, the job social media specialist. Average hourly rate $16 an hour. Have your Instagram stories earned you a minor cult following? Can you rattle off 3 brand social accounts you admire? If so, you already possess skills any social media specialist needs. Social media managers represent a brand's voice online, attracting new followers with the content they've created. Some positions require more of a customer service role. Others may work on a higher planning and strategy level. You'll need strong writing skills, a knack for learning new apps and programs on the fly, and excellent judgment. If you misstep on a brand's behalf, commenters let you know, well, instantly. If you're seeking your first social media job, remember that your own social accounts speak louder than any resume. Number 3, the job virtual assistant. Average hourly rates, $15 to $25 an hour, depending on experience. Virtual assistants provide support for companies looking to save the overhead cost of in-house staff. And as in your own house staff, you can't beat the dress code and atmosphere. You'll handle email correspondence, answer phones, schedule meetings and appointments, book travel, data entry, and more. Companies that connect virtual assistants with clients include Belay Solutions, FlexJobs, and Upwork, which lets you set up a profile advertising your previous admin experience and rates. Number 4, the job transcriptionist. Average hourly rates $13 to $15 an hour. If you're a freakishly fast, efficient typist and you prefer working independently to a lot of interpersonal interaction, transcription might be the field for you. You may have to pass an assessment test on the company's own computer and keyboard, however, before you can accept projects on a rolling basis. You'll transcribe audio from college lectures, interviews, medical reports, legal depositions, and more. The latter two can be especially lucrative since they require familiarity with medical and legal terminology. While some employers may require a training certificate, it can also be learned on the job, too. Try TranscribeMe, QuickTate, or your favorite job site to get started. Number 5, the job travel consultant. Average hourly rate, $17 an hour. Remote travel consultants work for resorts, cruise lines, and private booking agencies, any companies that arrange leisure and corporate trips. Assisting with all aspects of planning, including hotel and flight reservations and last-minute itinerary changes, and their goal is to ensure that customers get anywhere they need to go in the world. And it helps to be a global explorer yourself. Given how tricky international travel can be, previous experience on both a professional and personal level is often required, and so is familiarity with online booking technology like a central reservation system, or CRS, and or global distribution system, or GDS. But oh, the potential perks? In addition to a paycheck, travel discounts and or credits for your own travel are often part of the bargain. Number 6, the job customer service representative. Average hourly rate, $13 an hour. Remote customer service reps help consumers via email, phone, web chat, software, or social media in industries like retail, healthcare, and telecommunications. Severe organizations encourage employees to be return customers themselves. For instance, if you tear into the Williams-Sonoma catalog the second it arrives in your mailbox, you might be interested in the thousands of work-from-home positions the cookware chain often is filling, plus the sweet 40% discount on select items. For a role like this, you'll need a knack for clear communication, a background noise-free workspace, and yep, patience when the occasional testy customer requires some extra care. Bilingual or multilingual candidates are in high demand too. Not every company will supply the necessary equipment, but be sure to look for one that offers paid training. Number 7, the job online English tutor. Average hourly rates, $13 to $26 an hour. Native English speakers who love chatting with people from a wide array of cultures and ages are a great fit for an English tutoring gig. Virtual tutors need a webcam-enabled computer, headset, and a flexible schedule to work with students who live in different time zones. Some companies will pay you to teach English through one-on-one conversations, such as VipKid, which connects teachers with child pupils in China. Others, like GoFluent, hire tutors to provide English tutoring to corporate clients' overseas employees. Number 8, the job website and software tester. Average pay $10 to $100 per test. More of a side hustle than a full or part-time gig, website testing is perfect for people who consider themselves experts at using the internet and are ready to earn some pocket money testing sites, apps, and software for functionality and ease of use. To score semi-regular testing opportunities, your best bet is to sign up with multiple sites. Try regular focus group companies in your area and services like usertesting.com, which pays $10 per test for 20 minutes of your time. That's right, your many hours logged online will literally pay off. Number 9, the job proofreader copy editor. Average hourly rate, $20 an hour. If you immediately spot typos in books, you're a born proofreader. A skilled one can find and fix every error in spelling, grammar, formatting, and consistency of tone, and do it all under tight deadlines. Remote proofreaders will need their own computer, basic word processing knowledge, and next-level attention to detail when it comes to the English language. A bachelor's degree is often, though not always, required, and it helps to know one of the two most popular style guides practically by heart, the Associated Press and the Chicago Manual of Style, or both. Even if you've got experience, you'll need to pass a test first. Our next article is titled, This LA Sorority House is Now a Refuge for Homeless College Students. Written by Richard Morgan. On the patio of a 19-bedroom mansion on Sorority Row near UCLA, Dante Bernard is painting. He describes his work on this particular canvas as spiritual. Around this time last year, Dante was living out of his 1995 Ford F-150 and showering at a Muay Thai gym. Juan Ortega Flores is in the study lounge inside. He used to share a one-bedroom apartment with six relatives. He worked at Home Depot until he was fired by its loss prevention unit for giving his family too many discounts. Today, he's reading about bridge building for his summer internship at the Los Angeles Bureau of Engineering. Upstairs in her room, Brayon Johnson is finishing a screenplay. She learned of this housing opportunity while she was surfing Amazon for a tent to live in. Then there's the lady weed whacking in the backyard. She's dressed in platform Converse sneakers, army green drop crotch harem pants, and a fitted black t-shirt. Under her face shield, N95 mask, and sunglasses is the face of Jeanne Pritzker, one of the richest women in LA, a billionaire. Last week, she painted the walls in the basement. Over the last year, she bought a $50,000 imported rug for the main floor, as well as bedding, outdoor furniture, and a painting by the Vietnamese artist Le Thiet Quang. She wanted to make sure there would be plenty of clothing available for job interviews and class presentations, so she packed a communal walk-in closet with professional attire for men and women. There are pots of peonies everywhere. Dante, Juan, Brian, and the 34 other college students who live in this house were once statistics of the housing insecurity problem in the U.S. If not for this place, they'd be part of the estimated 14% of college students who were homeless as they entered the fall semester last year. Today, they are enrolled at more than a dozen colleges and universities across LA and beyond. This place, called the Opportunity House, launched in 2020, a challenging year to launch anything, but especially a residence for young adults who now find themselves studying during the day and sleeping safely in a bed at night, both for the first time in a long time. Shepherding all of this unlikeliness is Sam Prater, a self-described queer black man in his 40s. Once homeless in Detroit, he's now finishing his dissertation for a doctorate in education from California State University Northridge, or CSUN. In 2019, he founded LA Room and Board, the nonprofit organization that runs this operation. The pandemic has changed all of us, mostly in ways we couldn't control. These 37 students, who now live within walking distance of Beverly Hills, are changing their lives with great determination despite the tumultuous events of the year. They go to good schools. They have jobs at CarMax, Shake Shack, LAX, Soho House. The city relies on them but doesn't return the favor, hence the need for benefactors like the Pritzkers and others. And the project has just begun. The house has the capacity to house 50 students plus 3 staff members. Some of the students are undocumented, some are ex-felons, and some are trans. All are welcome. In a year full of experiments, the Opportunity House stands out as an audacious attempt to give a chance to people not used to being given anything. Part 1. Too good to be true, almost. Precious 20, health professions major, West LA College. I remember reading the website, only $300 a month? You don't have to pay utilities, just be a student. I was like, I'm going to drive all the way from Colorado to California. I'm gunning to get there and pull up, and it's going to be a vacant house. I thought this was definitely not real, but I had nothing else to trust, so I had to trust it. If I have to drive to California and there's nothing there, I'll just live in my car. Juan, 20, mechanical engineering major, Los Angeles Trade Technical College. On move-in day, I didn't bring much. Is it safe? Is it real? Am I going to get scammed? That first time I fell asleep here, I woke up early and was like, where am I? It was overwhelming. I spoke with my roommate, Dante. We talked about our situations, and I thought, should I even be here? I'm not living out of a truck. I know I've lived bad, but I've never had to live out of my car. Dante, 29, film production major, Los Angeles Valley College. Within 2 or 3 months of coming to LA, I was living out of my truck, which went on for over a year. I showered at the gym and slept in their parking lot and was working odd jobs here and there. My environment was the star of my life. Here at the house, I felt like the Count of Monte Cristo, where he was dirt poor and then he comes into money but can't sleep in the bed. Precious. I was like, are we allowed to go shower whenever we want? Living in other places, they have their rules. The second day I showered without any music. I took like a 5-minute shower and ran back to my room. I'm going to isolate. I don't really know where I am. It's foreign to me. I wanted to see someone else do it first. The third day I woke up and realized I was only going to wake up here for the next 2 years. I wasn't going to wake up anywhere else. Now I blast my music. The vision for the house began with Louis Say, who earned a PhD at UCLA while working at NASA, where he still works, and living in his car. He had also co-founded Students for Students, a student-run homeless shelter. In 2019, when he learned that the Delta 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 sorority house had been vacant for 2 years, he saw an opportunity for another student home, but he lacked the bandwidth to do much with it. Instead, he reached out to Prater, who secured the lease and began the work connecting the mission to the people who needed it. This isn't like you or your parents who were broke and ate ramen and only had money for beer and mac and cheese, Prater says. It's much more real. Mauricio, 31, sociology major, Los Angeles Mission College. Right when I arrived, Francisco Rodriguez, chancellor of the Los Angeles Community College District, gave us his dry-cleaned suits, shirts, and ties. He pulled me aside and told me in Spanish, dale gas. In English, it's give it gas. To us, it means handle your business. Put in effort. I know the language of Pachucos, gangster dialect, and was surprised for him to say dale gas. I've heard that in prison when you're about to beat somebody up. He's saying I have an opportunity. Don't fuck it up. Chris, 26, music major, California Institute of the Arts. Perfect. Perfect. Perfect, 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 perfect. But I definitely ain't a poster child for faith. Dante, it's what you make it. If I'm just partying, living it up, and taking, that energy is not going to manifest in a positive way. Maurizio, when I saw people get kicked out, it was more like I saw how they were disrespectful. How can Sam help us if we're not willing to help ourselves? Maurizio, you can never be a former gang member, nor can you ever be an ex-felon. You're always going to be a felon. I was an ROTC man. It was put up or shut up, and I went down the wrong path. I chose to be a Mexica, a warrior. Woke up here. Once I realized where I was at, I was like, okay, it's not a dream. You're actually here, bro. You're not on the streets no more. He touches his tattoos and speaks as if he were giving himself a pep talk in the mirror. You're not doing this no more. You don't got to do nothing bad. Precious. For some people, it definitely got to them being here. You'd see on their Instagram, this is my mansion and what I say goes. I'm like, you sit on the couch all day and you don't even do chores. Or they go running with the big houses behind them and post, going on my run in Beverly Hills. Those people were the first to go. Juan, holding himself as he talks, cradling his triceps as if giving himself a hug. After the second month, I realized everything was going well. No threats. I felt safe here. I asked Sam, should I bring my things over? He was like, yeah, you live here. Precious. This place is too good to be true. Almost. Part 2. There's a bond. Dante. At first, I was reluctant. I had my doubts for sure. We all did. Precious. You knew names, but not everyone's names. I was fine to spend my 20th birthday alone. I had spent my 19th birthday alone, and my 18th. Maurizio. Eventually, we lived here long enough to know we're in the same boat. There's a bond. Precious, laughing through an impish smile. I braided a guy's hair. Brayon, 24, animation major, Santa Monica College. I help Dante with homework because I know storyboarding. Precious. By the time the Halloween party came, there were people sticking more together than others. It was people coming closer to their comfort. Maurizio. I didn't dress up for Halloween, but for the first time in a long time, I was able to sit down on Halloween and not worry about a fight. Dante had asked me if I wanted to participate in his performance for the Halloween party. I was like, not really, but at the same time, I realized he didn't have to do that. We don't talk that much, but it was great consideration. From that day on, Dante was the mood swinger of the house. Let's have fun. He gets us out of our funks 100%. He knows exactly what to say or do. Dante, who sometimes speaks out of the corner of his mouth as if every thought were an aside, but here speaks with his whole mouth, his whole self. I'm not alone anymore. I have people I can come to with problems and issues. At an early house meeting, Dante and Juan participated in a kind of newlywed game between pairs of roommates. They dominated, agreeing on topics as wide-ranging as their favorite music, their all-time favorite movie, and which roommate is funnier. It's Dante. Maurizio. My roommate got me into Sam Smith, Love Goes, bumping it in my car. Precious. I was dropping off someone at their job at Shake Shack, and Maurizio came with me. So I just blasted my music in my car so there's no conversation, and we ended up connecting over our music. I think he thought I was going to be this box, square little person. I'm just me. Maurizio. Precious is like my little sister. We hang out together. She's always smiling. With her studying to be a nurse, I'm very proud of her. It's new to me. Part 3. I got COVID the worst. 25 of the residents gathered around a banquet table in the living room, enjoying a Thanksgiving feast and a Christmas tree by the fireplace. There was a fruit platter, 2 pumpkin pies, a chocolate cake, and a red velvet cake. Each of these students are proof of God's plan and purpose for my life, Prater wrote on Instagram. Chris, Thanksgiving really felt like a unit, being around one table, the laughs around one table, the jokes and smiles around one table. Maurizio, I didn't expect to see turkey that year coming from the streets. That's a family celebration, and my family and I don't speak. Juan, Thanksgiving was when I really felt safe here. We had a dinner. That same night, I did laundry. I was coming down from the garage with all my clothes, and I rolled my ankle. People came to help me. Maurizio got ice. Sam gave me a hug. I saw people really cared for me. There was trust. That was new for me. Maurizio, we wore church clothes, or if I have to put on nice clothes, I call them court clothes. Dante, I saw that a lot of people weren't feeling well, so I made everyone tea and left it at their doors. That's when we realized we had a COVID outbreak. Maurizio, grinning with a what are you gonna do shrug. I got it the worst. The next day I couldn't breathe. I ended up going to the hospital. Precious, COVID showed people emotionally care for you in a place where you all came as strangers. Now they're taking care of you, putting themselves in really dangerous harm's way. They'd ask if I wanted food. Juan, sounding almost proud. COVID sealed the deal. We would FaceTime. Precious figured out a way to play movies together on Zoom. They watched the 2018 disaster thriller How It Ends, indicative of the dark humor common in the house. It was Precious's pick. I take them very seriously. Chris, it was unsettling. When things go right for too long, you just don't trust it. It started with body aches, then really cold shivers, headache. I had a fever of 102, but nothing fell out of whack. I still had my bunk bed, my desk, my room, my school. Brayon, it made me happy to help people and build trust. Juan, People were caring for us, bringing us food. I bought a bunch of medicine for everyone, Tylenol, Theraflu, anything. People cared, and I liked caring back. That's something I haven't gotten since I left home. It turns out I like helping. I like being a caretaker. Part 4. It's a milagro, a miracle. Dante. I worked at Soho House in Malibu, helping serve people like Will Smith and Tim Burton. I was a busser, but I was in proximity to life-changing people. That's when I learned about charcuterie boards. Homeless people aren't supposed to know about charcuterie. Brayon. I thought I was doing so bad in school, I wasn't sure I should tell people, but actually I did well and got put on the dean's honor list. When asked why she had freaked out so much, she burst into laughter. That's what I'm saying. Dante. If you're literally being provided every tool and resource you would ever need here, if you're not growing from that, that's you. That's you. You don't give a damn. You're using this place. You're milking it. This place forces you to confront who you're being and take responsibility for your own shit. When you have everything you need, if you're not bringing your full self, it's going to show. This house's magic encourages you to grow and be better. Juan. We're not set to believe we're messed up people with messed up brains. That's the stigma of homeless people, that they're crazy, lunatics, hysterical people. Maurizio. Dabbing his eyes, he plays it off like he's adjusting his glasses. Sometimes I think, why me? I was almost sabotaging myself, which I do when things are going good for me. Sam noticed it, and he said that's not me anymore. He opened my eyes that someone was paying attention. It felt good that Sam was not going to give up on me like everyone else. Chris. I see Sam as an older role model for the queer community. I've never had that kind of example. Brayon. I feel like I'm more in the place of just being me and more understanding of who I am. I'm learning more about myself. Dante. My GPA soared from a 3.6 to a 4.0 as soon as I got here. That's all I needed, a stable living environment with some Wi-Fi. In my truck, I would use Wi-Fi from my phone to use my laptop. It was working, but dang, it'd be nice to have a desk. These things we take for granted. I've been able to blossom back into creativity. My art, my paintings, my films. The painting over the fireplace is my first one. It's called Who Are You When No One Is Watching? It's my creative element and spiritual element. Jeanne is one of my paintings up next to her Louise Bourgeois. Juan. This was a massive break from the nonstop search that I've been living my whole life. Nonstop, what's the next move? Where am I going to work next? What am I going to do next? Where am I going to live next? This is a break from all that running, all the swimming, the doggy paddling. This is the island, that dry land, for a break. Tears that had been clinging to his eyes finally fall free. Brayon. Society would like me to be constantly chasing money or chasing things that would put me in a stable place. I don't want a 9-to-5 job that's making me miserable just because someone else wants that for me. I should be going after something I'm passionate about. Maurizio. The other day I got 2 out of 3 on our financial advice quiz. I never thought that would be me. Precious. Absently touching her new long eyelashes. It put me in a new perspective. There's no one I have to be better for. I'm building a future for myself, first and foremost, and making myself successful so I can say I built this career of nursing on my own, for myself. Juan. I gotta get the right word. This is an amazing house, but it's also kind of weird. It's a milagro, a miracle. It's a great thing, and it's really needed for some people, but it's also strange. You see Stonehenge, and there's nothing there for miles, so you're like, where'd they get the stones from? It's a wonder. That's us. Part 5. You think you live here? Precious. I was sitting on the front steps one Monday night after a house meeting, just getting some air. Then this white guy with a backpack and a hat, looked like a college student, walks by. He stopped and turned around. What do you think you're doing there? And he used the N-word. You think you sit there? You think you live here? And again, he used the N-word. You think you can go into that house? Don't make me come hit you. I got tunnel vision. I didn't say one word back. I got up and walked to the door, and he's like, "This is where you live?" Again, using the N-word. I go in and lock it. I warned another girl there's a racist guy outside. I was crying. Maurizio, Juan, Dante, they all come out. This guy thought he was attacking sorority row, then all these guys come out asking if there's a problem. Why don't you say that to us? Try us all if you're going to try one of us. Maurizio, who slouches a lot, suddenly sits up straight, his chest not so much puffed as full. He didn't expect she had brothers. She had brothers here. Precious. It was like people here care. They're genuinely worried about me. Everyone was calling me, asking me if I was okay. It was familiar in an unfamiliar way. Growing up, my family was always the source of my troubles and my problems instead of being my support system. One of seven siblings, Precious, was in foster care until she was four. A cousin adopted her, but she says she still felt unstable through her senior year, which she spent in five different high schools in Colorado, Nevada, and Texas. It was always my friends' parents, my counselors at school, always a stranger helping me instead of my actual family. So it was eye-opening. If you'd had an actual family who cared, this is what it would have looked like. Because growing up, even with friends' families, at the end of the day, I had to go home. Now I am home. Part 6. I'm growing without knowing. Dante, adjusting his glasses as if they're a reset button. I never would give people the time of day earlier. In my truck days, it was a very animalistic mindset when it came to things like that. Emotional availability was not a factor. Now I have people I care about. Maurizio. When it comes to Sunday night movie nights, lately I've been the one encouraging it. I'll buy snacks. When those nights come, it's like nothing matters that's going on in the house. Mortal Kombat was all right, but with Godzilla vs. Kong, everyone got into it. $5 on Kong, $5 on Godzilla. Brayon. Reading from her Tiffany Blue journal, which has the words, "She believed she could, so she did," in curly calligraphy across the cover. What I learned about myself. That I continue to bring myself above water when no one believes I can. I felt alone since I was little. People I've trusted put me down and compared me to what they wanted me to be, so I began to hate myself since I could never reach those heights. What I didn't know is I'm going far above those heights. They said I couldn't walk, so I ran. They said I was too soft, so I fought them. They said I couldn't live on my own, so I moved far on my own. When things got hard, I let their past words begin to deteriorate me and my health. I started to think maybe they were right. When I finally got the guts to ask for help, they turned me away and said, "We are not here to solve your problems for you." That's not what I was working for. I was asking for support, for a foundation so I could build my own strong house. The more I spend time alone, I realize the only person who will stay with me through thick and thin is myself. I've read it so many times to myself. Compared to intake in the fall of 2020, by spring the number of residents reporting PTSD fell from 60% to 53%, and depression fell from 33% to 27%. Chris, I think that's what this house has done for me, as equally as giving me a place to be a student, to get good grades, to actually do the damn thing and just do the fucking work. It's given me some examples, some really prolific examples of leadership. Not leadership as in like outward facing, but leadership as inward facing. How do I lead myself? What direction can I give myself? That's Sam. Even some of the students, Precious, Juan, Dante sometimes, seeing people doing the work and getting it done. Dante, I've always gone against the status quo. I love doing things that people don't think I can. Brayon, when I stand up for myself, I feel like I'm a superhero who saves me. Her personal mantra, to infinity and Brayon. Maurizio, I'm growing up here little by little. I gotta learn to not let other people control my emotions. Lately, I've been doing the right thing. Juan, living here made me more serious. I got closer to my major. This summer, I have an internship with the Bureau of Engineering for the city of LA. That's pretty big. They're building a $500 million bridge right now. LA built me up, and now I'm helping to literally build up LA. Brian, I think I'm starting to thrive this semester with my internships. I told the people at one of them I was tired of programs that didn't deliver, so they delivered. I'm a lead animator intern. Precious. My big takeaway from the house is that you can't do anything alone. There's a phrase out there, if you want to go fast, go alone, but if you want to go far, go together. I've been able to do so much for myself and go so far because I've had such support behind me. Juan. I'm transferring to CSUN and got waitlisted at 4 UCs, Irvine, Riverside, Santa Barbara, and San Diego. That's pretty insane. It's been a year since I got fired from Home Depot for being a thief. I'm on a roll, man. I feel good. I'm growing without knowing. It feels so good. Soon I'll be a giver to society. Our next article by Grant Reiner is titled Frances McDormand Met Her Husband Joel Cohen on an Audition for Her First Leading Role. Actress Frances McDormand and her husband Joel Cohen came into Hollywood together. Her first starring role was in the first feature he co-wrote and directed, 1985's Blood Simple, and the couple has basically been connected ever since. McDormand is one of cinema's most versatile talents, capable of playing earnest, goofy characters in Burn After Reading, as well as the hardened protagonists of Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri and Nomadland. Joel Cohen, along with his brother Ethan, are known for distinctive films like Fargo, No Country for Old Men, and Inside Llewyn Davis. It was a revelation that I could have a lover who I could also work with, and I wasn't intimidated by the person, McDormand told the New York Times Magazine. But that didn't happen with Joel. It was, wow, really? Oh my God. I can actually love and live, not subvert anything, not apologize for anything, not hide anything. Along the way, they've worked together on 9 films, some of which included uncredited cameos from McDormand while establishing themselves each as celebrated figures in the film industry. McDormand has won 2 Academy Awards for Best Actress, while the Coen brothers have won 4. McDormand's latest Oscar-winning role, playing Fern in Chloe Zhao's Nomadland, may have even been manifested by a hypothetical version of herself that she would describe to Coen in her 40s. When I'm 65, I'm changing my name to Fern, McDormand used to tell her husband, per Vogue. I'm smoking Lucky Strikes, drinking Wild Turkey, I'm getting an RV and hitting the road. Though McDormand, 63, and Cohen, 66, keep their private life, well, private, they have shared some choice quotes and stories about how they met, working together, and raising their son, Pedro. McDormand met Cohen at an audition for her very first film. According to AFP, as covered by Yahoo, the couple first met in 1983 when McDormand auditioned for the Coen brothers' first feature, Blood Simple. At the time, Cohen said they were losing hope of finding the right actor to cast for the role of Abby, a woman caught in a complex web of crime and infidelity. After the first read, McDormand actually told Cohen that she couldn't attend the next round of auditions because she wanted to watch her then-boyfriend's brief appearance on a TV soap opera. She went on to accept the role, which was her first in a major feature film. In the same interview, McDormand said that the two have found a good balance between working together and maintaining their separate film careers. I think it's having different stories to tell each other, she said. Although we have often collaborated on films, we have both had really autonomous careers, and so we have always had new things to tell each other. They both won Academy Awards for their work in Fargo. Of all their collaborations, McDormand and Cohen are probably best known for the acclaimed 1996 crime comedy Fargo. McDormand won the Best Actress Oscar for playing offbeat police chief Marge Gunderson, while the Coen brothers were awarded Best Screenplay. The oddball tone of Fargo has proved so popular over the ensuing years that it was even developed into a popular anthology series, with the Coens serving as executive producers. McDormand won Best Actress yet again in 2018 for her work in 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, while the Coen brothers won Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Adapted Screenplay for 2008's No Country for Old Men. The pair have one son, Pedro. Per Vogue, McDormand and Cohen decided to adopt their son Pedro from Paraguay around the time that they were filming Fargo in 1995. The couple raised him in New York, with Cohen working on movies in the summer and McDormand doing theater there. According to Vogue, the now 26-year-old Pedro works in PR, but still has a passion for fashion that he inherited from his mother. In an interview with the Belfast Telegraph, while promoting Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, McDormand spoke candidly about the challenges of parenting. "As a mother, you live on the edge of disaster. You just do. I didn't give birth to my son. I met him at 6 months old, but from the minute I held him and smelled him, I knew it was my job to keep him alive," she said. "And as a parent, you also come to see how the worry and the anxiety that goes along with protecting someone who you give yourself to in that way, that you surrender to, can become degenerative." McDormand's original wedding band has an unconventional origin. Soon after they started dating, the couple moved in together, but waited on marriage for close to a decade, per the New York Times Magazine. When they did, McDormand actually wore a wedding band that originally belonged to Cohen's ex-wife. Cohen has declined to speak much about his prior marriage, so little information is out there about her. With McDormand up for another Academy Award this year and Joel Cohen directing the upcoming Macbeth, which will star his wife alongside Denzel Washington and Brendan Gleeson, it's quite likely this talented couple will add more awards to their mantelpiece soon. Our next article by Mackenzie Jean Philippe is titled "The True Story and Struggles of Hollywood's Anna Mae Wong." In Ryan Murphy's Hollywood, there are a couple of vintage industry tales that get rewritten. Rock Hudson proudly comes out as gay, and a black woman wins an Oscar for Best Actress in the 1940s, playing an injuee. And we can't forget the story of Anna Mae Wong, Michelle Krusik, as Murphy gives the fictional version of the very real actress an Academy Award. The actual Wong has been dubbed Hollywood's first ever Asian American movie star, but was never recognized with the industry's top honor. Her beauty and charisma, along with her acting ability, earned her over 50 roles, including one in 1932's Shanghai Express opposite Marlene Dietrich, but they were often stereotypical parts. Unfortunately, the racism of 20th century Tinseltown held her back. "She was a very modern actress," Krusik told Refinery 29. "Very natural, very fluid. She was not melodramatic. Every time I watched her work, even in the stereotypical parts, she's really fucking good. It really is tremendous that she persisted and persevered in spite of it all." Below, we detail Wong's real story. Anna Mae Wong was 14 in her first movie. Wong, whose birth name was Wong Lu Song, was born on January 3, 1905 in L.A. Her parents owned a laundromat near the city's Chinatown neighborhood, and while she and her seven siblings frequently helped out at the family business, from a young age she dreamed of starring in the movies she saw filmed all over town. The National Women's History Museum reports that she'd frequently skip school and use lunch breaks to go to the theater and visit sets. And by the age of 14, Wong scored a role as an extra in the 1919 film The Red Lantern. "I would worm my way through the crowd and get as close to the camera as I dared. I'd stare and stare at these glamorous individuals, directors, cameramen, assistants, and actors in grease paint," she said in a 1926 interview, according to Time. 3 years later, after dropping out of high school for her career, the star earned her first leading role in the silent film The Toll of the Sea in 1922. As they say in the business, it was her big break. It was the first of a slew of screen and stage productions she'd be featured in, including Daughter of the Dragon and Piccadilly. Wong's career was marred by racism. Though the actress did get to live out her dream of being a movie star, it was still America in the early 20th century. Roles were few and far between for Asian actresses, and those that did exist were steeped in racial stereotypes. As the New York Historical Society explains it, parts were either based around butterflies, passive young women, or dragon ladies, murderous villainesses. Wong was also greatly underpaid for her work. In the film Daughter of the Dragon, where she was top billed, According to Time, she earned $6,000 compared to Warner Olin's $12,000, who only appeared in the first 23 minutes. For Shanghai Express, she earned $6,000 again compared to Marlene Dietrich's $78,166. I'm doing really deep research now. I realize just how racist of a story she received, Krusik told Deadline. It was very different than what I understood in my 20s. I really went deep and tried to understand what she was up against and how entrenched the racism was during that time. Additionally, white actors often dressed in yellowface to play Asian characters, and actual Asian actors weren't permitted to kiss their white co-stars on screen. I see no reason why Chinese and English people should not kiss on the screen, even though I prefer not to, Wong told Time. Audiences in China rejected her, claiming that her roles carried out stereotypes. Time reported that the country's newspapers at the time called her the female traitor to China, suggesting that she embarrassed them. It's a pretty sad situation to be rejected by the Chinese because I am too American, Wong said. But despite their criticism, she toured China following the release of films like Shanghai Express and raised money for refugees during World War II. With all this, you can see why Wong grew frustrated with the U.S. and moved to Berlin in 1928. It was in Europe that she found global success in movies filmed in France, Germany, and England, according to Time. In 1933, she told the L.A. Times, "I was so tired of the parts I had to play. Why is it that the screen Chinese is nearly always the villain of the piece, and so cruel a villain? Murderous, treacherous, a snake in the grass. We are not like that." Yes, she did audition for The Good Earth. As shown in episode 2 of Hollywood, despite auditioning, Wong was indeed passed up on a role in The Good Earth of 1937. The film was adapted from the Nobel Prize-winning novel of the same name by Pearl Buck and followed the ups and downs of a family in a Chinese farming village. Despite wanting Chinese actors to star in the film, Buck said that an MGM executive told her that would be impossible because of the American star system. As we know, Wong went through a screen test for the role of Olan, but MGM producer Albert Lewin said at the time he was disappointed in her appearance, and she did not seem beautiful enough to be convincing in the part, according to Time. The part went to the German-American Louise Rainier, who was dressed in yellowface. It earned her an Oscar in 1938. There seems little for me in Hollywood because, rather than real Chinese, producers prefer Hungarians, Mexicans, American Indians for Chinese roles, Wong said in a 1928 interview. She was the first Asian American to star in a TV show. In 1951, the DuMont Television Network aired just one season of The Gallery of Madame Lu Song. The show starred Wong as an art gallerist who also solved crime. It was a trailblazing feat as she was the first Asian American to lead their own television show, but episodes have since been lost to the public. A longtime heavy drinker, it was one of her last prominent jobs before she died of a heart attack on February 3, 1961. She was 56. But the year before she died, she was given the great honor of a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Our next article is titled, Oprah on the Importance of Having a Place You Feel Truly at Home. It's where you can exhale and be completely 100% yourself. Some people define their home by what it's like on the outside, whether it's big or small, new or old, tall or short. But Gayle King defines home by how it makes her feel on the inside. Here she reflects on the true meaning of home, sweet home. Once upon a time, I would have told you that my idea of home was a colonial with columns, a pretty yard, and a white picket fence. That changed in 2011, when in the days after 9/11, I was talking to an editor at O, the Oprah magazine, and commented on how lonely it was for the world to be grieving, and to not have somebody at home to share that grief with. She responded, "Did it ever occur to you how many couples share a home but feel completely alone?" Truth be told, it hadn't. But that conversation made me think about what home really means. And to me, home is your sanctuary. It doesn't matter what your physical space looks like, a big gorgeous mansion, a small studio apartment. Your home should be your ultimate safe space, It should be a place where you can be your most vulnerable, yet still feel protected. It should be a place that fills you with joy simply by being in it. Even though I live alone, I never feel lonely in my home because I'm just so happy to be there. There's no place in the world that I've visited and thought, I wish I had that. That's how much I love my home, and I love going home. That said, I have realized that there is one thing my home is missing, which is outdoor space. I had always intended to get an apartment with outdoor space, but it ended up being something I compromised on. I thought Central Park is not that far, so if I'm craving outdoor space, I can just go there, which, by the way, is something I've never done. But after spending the first 105 days of the COVID-19 pandemic in my apartment, I realized just how much I had taken my big yard in Greenwich, Connecticut for granted. Eventually, I might move into a new home, but no matter where I land, there is one other requirement that must be met. There must be a room for favorite daughter Kirby and favorite son Will. I've always believed that a big part of what makes a home great is the family that lives or lived inside of it. Your home is an extension of your family, and that's true whether or not they live with you. It's why having a place for Kirby and Will has always been a non-negotiable, even though they are living on their own and have been for quite some time. When some kids go off to college, their parents use that as an opportunity to turn their bedrooms into their dream closet or a much-needed office, but I never did that. In fact, it may be even more important than ever that they know they have a place to go, a place to be, and a place to fall, should they ever need it. Every week, Oprah is setting an intention exclusively for Oprah Insiders with reflections on topics like letting go, forgiveness, coming into your own, and more. We'll end this week with a couple of quotes from Oprah. Work toward being significant, and the success will naturally follow. The solid ground, the anchor we're searching for, is connection, and it is within each of us. We have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Brandi Spragata, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Oprah Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.